Hi there, my name is George and I help independent creators launch their products and games. On this podcast, those creators share their journey from an idea to an actual product and everything in between. Today's guest is Frank Carlson. He is the founder of the AI-enabled Polly Cat Door. His first campaign got funded in just 5 minutes and raised over $250,000 from almost 700 backers. And today he's going to share how he did it and how he got his idea off the ground. Welcome, Frank.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for taking the time. Before we get started, I think maybe what would be great is if you can just tell the folks listening, what is an AI-enabled cat door? What is this product of yours?
Yeah, of course. So what the Polly door does, it detects when a cat tries to come home with something in its mouth, like a mouse or birds, a lizard, whatever strikes your mind. And when it does detect that there is something in the mouth, the AI cat door just remains locked, meaning that your cat cannot enter with prey in its mouth. So that's the main feature of the Polly door. And then, of course, there are other features that are very important for the users, like that it's only their own cat that can enter the cat door.
Yeah, because we've all seen those TikToks where a cat comes home with a rat in his mouth and brings it into the bed of someone who's sleeping. And there's this whole subreddit, right? Like cat presents or presents from the cat, because that's what cats do. They bring everything in the house. I have 5 cats, so I fully understand this problem, which is why I'm very excited to talk to you. Frank, how many cats do you have? Because you must be a huge cat lover to start this product.
Yeah, honestly, that's a bit weird about me. I don't have cats.
You don't have cats?
No, but I can probably tell you why I'm still doing this project. So
yeah, how did a man without cats start an AI-enabled cat door business?
Yeah, it's actually because my girlfriend had 2 cats. And when I was studying, her cats were extremely active hunters. They brought home a mouse or a bird almost every night. And I was present at her place during these times. So I know the struggle quite well as well. And yeah, then she always told me that I should invent something to solve this problem because I was studying mechanical engineering. Yeah, that's what I did.
Okay, so you're a mechanical engineering student. You have a girlfriend who has 2 cats who love bringing in dead things into the house. So you think there has to be a better way. And how many years ago was this?
So that was about 4 years ago, but I didn't start right there. I started about 2 years later or 3 years later. So it was 5 years ago. And yeah, I mean, after my studies concluded, I started figuring out that she's not the only one having this problem, and that there are other people with the same problem. And yeah, we tried to assemble a team and figure out how we can solve this problem.
And then did you raise any funding, venture funding or angel funding, before going into the whole crowdfunding journey?
Yes, we did. We raised $250,000 to support the first 1.5 years of research and development, which also covered some part of our salaries, of course, because we had to live somehow. And that also helped us, of course, spending some marketing dollars on the crowdfunding campaign.
Yeah. So let's talk about that crowdfunding campaign. You did really well for a first time campaign. You raised in US dollars about $250,000, 700 backers. In fact, you already had 361 backers on day one. You got funded within 5 minutes. So by all means, a huge success. So what did you do to prepare for this crowdfunding campaign, given that you probably didn't do this before?
Now, first of all, thank you very much. Appreciate it, really. Because as I said, I'm a mechanical engineer by training. So is my co-founder. And we are not very skilled in marketing, let's say. So this was really something that came not so easy to us. What the most important thing that we did is find someone that has expertise in this place. So we tried to figure out how and where can we find someone that can help us build this campaign from scratch, because we had no idea how to do anything with crowdfunding. Yeah, so we found Alex from TechForce, who already did several $1 million campaigns. And he helped us with the structure of the whole campaign site, also with some details like how do you structure GIFs in your campaign page? Where do you place text? What kind of content do you need? How do you speak to customers? All these kind of things are small, but so important to build a community that really trusts in what you're doing.
As a first timer, what were some of the things that really surprised you about the whole crowdfunding process?
How important the pre-campaigning process is.
Say more.
Yeah. As you said, we were fully financed in 5 minutes, which was a great success for us. But of course, this was purely because we did a very long and thorough pre-campaign journey that took us about 5 months, where we already tested different kinds of ads on various platforms, mainly Facebook and Instagram. And there we could get feedback from our early customers, what kind of features they want, also what kind of marketing material they really respond to and what they do not really like. And that definitely helped us also after the launch to tailor our content more toward what worked previously should work as well in the future. Previously, it's 2 or 3 months difference in time.
So let's talk some numbers. You had 361 backers on day one. How many email subscribers did you have before that?
We had about 3,500.
Wow, that's like a great conversion rate.
Yeah, that was really great. Also, I must say for the first day, we did a lot of emails the week prior to the launch. We made like personalized videos for the community and we got a lot of engagement before we launched. And this gave us more confidence on the launch day.
And did you do anything like a Facebook group or Discord or just the emails?
It was purely emails.
Yeah. Okay. And I don't know if you want to reveal this, but do you remember the cost per email, the cost per lead that you had at the time?
Yeah, that was also, from my perspective, it was very cheap. It was about $1.10.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, that is cheap. So $2.50 is the benchmark. And so anything below that is cheap. So you had 3,600 emails, you said, at a dollar and change. So let's say maybe $4,000 is all you needed to spend on your pre-launch ads.
Yeah, approximately a bit more, about 5.5 we spent.
Yeah, with some testing. Yeah. Wow, that's great. Was that a totally new thing to you? Being a mechanical engineer, I'm guessing you didn't really have experience with Facebook ads either.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. But I have to say, I think for Facebook ads, there is a lot of content available that helps you get some kind of idea how it works. Of course, you will never be the pro if you don't use it on a daily basis. But the pre-launch phase, I would say it's definitely enough if you learn how the process works and you test it out yourself so that you can also try and learn from what works and what doesn't work. I think that's very important for the founder or the marketing responsible, at least in the project.
Even for the founder, I feel like it's just because it's such an important part of just doing business nowadays, right? That it's just such an important process to understand, not just for the marketing team. And then you launch your campaign, you get fully funded in 5 minutes, you high five everyone, but then you still have, you double the backer number towards the end of the campaign. You went from 361 to almost 700. Did you continue running ads during the campaign or what other promotions did you do?
We did a lot of ads. So ads on Facebook and Google were definitely our highest expense, let's say. But we also did quite some PR, but we realized very quickly that PR should be started early as well, and that we didn't do. So we didn't get into too many of the large newspapers and magazines and so on. Some worked, and they worked very well. When you get into the larger magazines or newspers, that had always...
Which ones worked the best?
For us, it was a local newspaper in Zurich. It was very good. And one in Germany. I don't know. I don't remember the name at the moment.
Your biggest supporters, and you don't remember the name. That's okay. They don't listen to this podcast in Germany. That's totally fine. But wait, we're talking about actual like paper newspapers, like old school paper newspapers?
Yeah. Yeah, we do. Of course, they also have digital channels where most of the supporters came from, at least, since this is what we were tracking through Google Analytics. But we also saw a lot of new backers joining at the day that these PR events happened. So
yeah. And how did you reach out to newspapers? Because I think it's an interesting thing where a lot of people would target The Verge and Gadget or in games, I don't know, Dice Tower, big gaming websites. But so you reach out to local newspapers in a local language, in German. How did you even do that?
Yeah, so I think what I learned from the PR game is really you have to be so persistent. So there are two things that help. So either you have to have an absolute great product that people really want to talk about, and you have to give certain larger audiences, you have to give them, like, how do you say that, that only they can write about it?
Yeah, like an embargo, for example, or an exclusive.
An exclusive, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
For 24 hours or whatever. And then this works pretty well sometimes. But if you cannot ship, if you have a hardware product and you cannot show them the hardware product in person, it becomes a bit difficult. Yeah, what we did is really we went over to their office and just said, hello, this is our product. Do we have a talk?
You physically went to their office? Did you have an appointment at least, or you just went there?
Yeah, I had an appointment.
Okay. That could also work, right? Sorry, guerrilla style marketing. And was part of your pitch, given that they're like local newspapers, was part of the pitch kind of the local identity saying, hey, we're from this city in this country and we are going international with Kickstarter? Was that part of the pitch to them?
Definitely, yeah. That really helps. And I think local newspapers are very supportive of, at least here in Switzerland, of startups that try to achieve something. Mm-hmm.
I think that's a great piece of advice, because a lot of folks who don't live in the US or live in Europe or in other places maybe feel like they're at a disadvantage sometimes because of the location they're in. But actually, this would be an advantage where it's easier to get local media to write about you because of that fact.
Definitely. Also, of course, we also try to get into the large magazines, but yeah, it's just difficult. At least we got a reply from all of them, but all of them said, hey, it's a bit too late. If you want us to write about you, you should tell us maybe a month or a bit earlier in advance.
Yeah.
And yeah. Second of all, all of them wanted to have the product, the physical product in their hands to test it and write a report about it.
Yeah, because it's crowdfunding. So crowdfunding is already speculative for them and already a little bit risky, right? And then also if there's not an actual prototype, then it's just an idea that they would have to write about. And that's a little bit risky.
Yeah, exactly. So we only had our one prototype that was ready for shipping, and we couldn't ship the one prototype to all of them at the same time. So that just didn't work.
Yeah. And you brought that with you when you went to the local newspapers,
yeah, exactly.
I assume. What were some of the things that maybe were a little bit harder or less effective than you had expected in this whole process?
Yeah, to be honest, we expected the Facebook and Instagram ads to perform a bit better than they did. They still performed good, but in comparison to what kind of great results we had in the pre-campaign phase, it was just a huge difference. So yeah, maybe this is just also because we're so inexperienced in this whole marketing game, but still it was quite a difference for us to see now we have better content than we had before, or at least in our opinion, we thought we had better content. But conversions were really not as high as what we wanted them to be.
Do you remember the ROAS, the return on ad spend that you had during the campaign?
Yeah. So the return on ad spend, day one, it was 20. As I said, we had to spend nothing more or less and had 100,000 in backers and supporters. And then from there on, it went down like this. I think that's a natural phenomenon. Mm-hmm. I think in the end, we came to a 2.7.
Okay. Yeah. That's a little bit on the lower end, but obviously you have a good run in the beginning and then it goes down. Mm-hmm. And often, and I don't know why, this is a pattern that we see a lot where either the pre-launch is super effective and then the live ads are more difficult, or the other way around. And it's, I don't know what it is, laws of the universe. Maybe it needs to balance you out a little bit, but it's not uncommon. So you ended your campaign, you raised a decent chunk of money, you had some venture funding. Where do you stand today? Because this was about 7 months ago from the day that we're recording this. What is happening at the Poly offices today?
A lot is happening. So we actually thought that we could ship the product now, but unfortunately there are a lot of things happening in the world, and also just our planning was a bit too ambitious. We realized, we had to postpone shipping, which is good and bad at the same time. Of course, it's not nice to disappoint backers that it takes more time. On the other hand, you have to look at it in a positive way. It definitely makes the product better because we improved the product substantially in the last 5 months. And it gives us also the opportunity to connect with our community on a deeper level than just, hey, I pre-ordered the system and 3 months later you have it. Now they see, hey, this is really a journey. This is not just click, buy, get it. This is what really happens in the real world.
And what has been the response from your community when you announced that you have some delays happening?
Mixed, to be honest. I expected it to be a lot worse, but it was really mixed. We had, I would say, about 5% or maximum 8% of people that were really unhappy about it. And the rest, they were just like, hey, it happens. We're happy when we get it. And then there were the super supporters that were extremely nice and calming the other people down. Hey, this is a Kickstarter campaign. This is just what happens.
It's good though. If people get really mad, I also think that's a really good sign because it means they really care about this product, right? It just, if they don't care about it, they also don't care if it's late. But it's a certain passion that is a little bit uncomfortable to deal with as a founder, but it means that you're also doing something right away.
Yeah, I completely agree. And of course, for us, it's also not nice that we have delays.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also maybe these people just have really terrible cats that just keep bringing in, I don't know, snakes, spiders, like you don't know what's happening in their home. So
you won't believe what kind of messages we receive every day. It's really crazy.
That actually must be a great way to make content for you guys as well. Like once this thing comes out, are you going to like the Ring doorbells? They basically use like footage from actual. Is that something you guys are going to do as well?
It really depends on if our users let us do it. But this is definitely also an idea that we want to do, yes.
Yeah, I would absolutely subscribe to your TikTok or your YouTube channel. If it's just a stream of videos of just cats trying to bring in dead animals or live animals into the house and then getting stopped by a door that doesn't open. Like it just, there's a lot of comedy in this already.
Yeah, I agree.
What's next for the business? You've done your Kickstarter. You're in the midst of fulfilling. You have a slight delay, but that's normal. Are you continuing to take pre-orders on your website, or is that something you only start doing once you have some inventory?
We are still continuing taking pre-orders on in-demand. That works pretty well. Here we don't spend anything on marketing and we still get some revenue, not like a huge chunk, but still there is something. And what's next? Of course, the industrialization is the most important part now for us. We really need to figure out how certain parts of the industrialization are done, because we underestimated how fast time passes, let's say, and how many things are really part of an industrialization process. So this is really the main focus at the moment. And once we come closer to the production ready sample, then we will also start up our sales focuses.
And do you guys have objectives for your post campaign sales? Do you have a plan to go into the US or Europe? Do you have certain numbers that you have in mind that you want to sell? Or are you just going to fulfill your Kickstarter rewards plus a little bit extra and then see where the demand comes from?
We realized very quickly that the US is not a market that is very interested in cat doors, because, or not in cat doors of our kind, because in the US, 20% of cats can go out of the house. And in Europe, it's 80% of cats that can go out. So Europe is a much more attractive market for us.
Interesting.
Yeah. So
did you know that going into this?
Yeah, we knew it, but we thought the US is huge. 20% of huge is still huge. We then just realized very quickly with the ads that nothing performed in comparison to all other places. More or less everything worked out quite well. And in the US, it really didn't matter what we tried. It just didn't work.
Interesting. Could that be, that could be product market fit, right? Like cats in the US don't go out as much. Do you feel maybe it's also like a branding thing? Like, are you guys being European? Do you feel like maybe it looks a certain way that isn't attractive to Americans? Do you have a clue of where this lies?
It could be. Of course, it could be that it also has something to do with the brand itself. I honestly think that, it's a combination of both. It's that the product is maybe not made for the American market, or we are just not strong enough in communicating what we really do.
Yeah. Or maybe you should do like a raccoon version or something for the US. That could be a thing. But it's interesting. Now that you say this, I'm looking at your Kickstarter campaign and I clicked on the community tab. You can do that on any campaign and see where top backers came from. And I'm seeing, just like you said, the top country is Switzerland. Then it's Germany. That's the two places where you got it in the newspaper, I guess. United Kingdom, Austria, and the United States is just, 23 backers. That's really remarkable because, most campaigns, United States is number one. And then Botswana, of all places, you also have 10 backers. Did you get in the newspaper in Botswana?
No, I was also so surprised when I saw that. But this was just a part of my family that was on vacation in Botswana that afforded us it was $10 or so to keep the system rolling, let's say, on the first day.
Wow, vacation.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. That's super fun. Yeah, it could be, right? Botswana, you don't want your cat to bring in whatever poisonous snakes and spiders they have out there, but that was your family. The other thing that's quite interesting about your campaign is I see you have 495 new backers and 199 returning backers. In most campaigns, this is inverse. So most campaigns have more backers that have backed on Kickstarter before, whereas your campaign has more people that have never backed something on Kickstarter. Was that part of your advertising strategy? Did you not target existing Kickstarter users? Or again, do you feel like it's because you were big in Europe and European newspapers, which folks who might not have ever backed a Kickstarter before?
We tried to target specifically Kickstarter users, but it really didn't perform as well as when we tried to target a bit older people that were very interested in cats on social media channels. And it made more sense for us because the conversion rates were just better.
Yeah. And I'm just taking a wild stab at this here, but I'm guessing that you're looking for people who have a cat that goes outside. So that's typically a home with a garden, which is typically like not a city property. It's not a condo in Manhattan. And those might be older people. Is that something that you knew before you went into this campaign? Or is that one of those things that you just learned from the crowdfunding campaign, exactly who this is for?
We already had a pretty good idea of who our customer was since we spent quite some time in the pre-campaign as well. So we knew more or less what the demographics are of the people that we really want to target. But of course, when you don't charge anything, the demographics don't really matter that much. So I would say it's a mix of what you just said and I just said.
Yeah, and I think that's also one of the benefits of doing crowdfunding for a product launch. You mentioned that on one hand, people are more lenient with you when you have these delays because they know that's part of the process and they like being part of the journey. And on the other hand, you learn things like this, like your demographics and where those people are and are not in a crucial stage of your business, which is when you're super early. Were there any other things that you thought, man, next time we are never doing this again, or things that you're like, we are going to every local newspaper in Europe? Like what were your biggest takeaways from this whole experience?
I think I have four. So one major takeaway was that it would prepare a lot more content so that we can test early a lot more what works and what doesn't work. So we only took 2 recording days where we did the main video and then a few ads on another day. But I think it would not be a bad idea to have some more, yeah, different styles that you can really try different hooks and find out what people, yeah, really, what gets them excited about the product in the first few seconds of a video. Then the second one is the PR thing that I mentioned. I would prepare several hard, if it's a hardware product, I would produce several prototypes that are ready to ship so that we can send it to different PR outlets so that they can test it. There is enough time to send it to different people, and the chances of you getting covered by a large newspaper just increases dramatically with it. And yeah, community building, I think we did quite a good job, but I think you can do it a lot better even just by providing more content, like a blog post, more frequent newsletters to keep people engaged. I think this, especially for day one, yeah, can help boost performance tremendously. And we also focused on that quite late, just maybe the last 2 weeks before the launch.
Also, I think, especially when it comes to pet products, community is relatively easy because people love posting things about their cat and they love reading about other people's cats. And I saw the funniest TikTok. I would not recommend anyone do this, but I thought it was really funny. There was a guy who had a dog brand and he would ask, hey, post a picture of your dog. And then people would do that. And he would use a fake Facebook account to write a comment, wow, that's such an ugly dog. And then the comments would absolutely explode with people fighting over someone calling someone's dog ugly. And then Facebook picks, the algorithm picks it up as a post or an ad that does incredibly well because of all that organic traffic. And so that was one of the tips that I once heard about specifically for pet products. But I wouldn't recommend you call any your backer's dogs ugly, but...
Yeah, just sparking some kind of spicy topic. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. And with, there's nothing better than with pets and babies. Both those categories would do very well. Frank, thank you so much for your time and sharing your journey. Super, super interesting. I really appreciate it. And if people want to get a Poly AI cat door, so if you have a cat that brings in snakes, rats, mice, birds, and you wake up covered in blood every morning and you want to stop that, you can go to Indiegogo. The in-demand campaign is there. It's the Poly door. We will link it in the show notes. And Frank is on track to deliver soon. Get yours in while they're hot. And Frank, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much for your time and for having the chance to be here.